Vorbis sat upright in the tyrant's chair. It was approaching midnight. A collection of Ephebian citizens, the tyrant among them, had been herded in front of him. He busied himself with some paperwork and then looked up with an air of mild surprise, as if he'd been completely unaware that 50 people were waiting in front of him at Crossbow Point. "Ah!" he said, and flashed a little smile. "Well," he said, "I am pleased to say that we can now dispense with the peace treaty. Quite unnecessary. Why prattle of peace when there is no more war? Ephib is now Diocese of Omnia. There will be no argument." He threw a paper onto the floor. "There will be a fleet here in a few days. There will be no opposition while we hold the palace. Your infernal mirror is even now being smashed." He steepled his fingers and looked at the assembled Ephebians. "Who built it?" The tyrant looked up.
"It was an Ephebian construction," he said.
"Ah," said Vorbis. "Democracy. I forgot. Then who," he signalled one of the guards who handed him a sack, "wrote this?" A copy of De Chelonian Mobile was flung on the marble floor. Brother stood beside the throne. It was where he had been told to stand. He'd looked into the pit and now it was him. Everything around him was happening in some distant circle of light, surrounded by darkness. Thoughts chased one another round his head. Did the Cenobiarch know about this? Did anyone else know about the two kinds of truth? Who else knew that Vorbis was fighting both sides of a war like a child playing with soldiers? Was it really wrong if it was for the greater glory of a god who was a tortoise? A god that only Brother believed in? Who did Vorbis talk to when he prayed? Through the mental storm, Brother heard Vorbis's level tones.
"If the philosopher who wrote this does not own up, the entirety of you will be put to the flame.
Do not doubt that I mean it." There was a movement in the crowd, and the sound of Didactylos's voice.
"Let go, you heard him. Anyway, I always wanted a chance to do this."
A couple of servants were pushed aside, and the philosopher stumped out of the crowd, his barren lantern held defiantly over his head. Brother watched the philosopher pause for a moment in the empty space, and then turn very slowly until he was directly facing Vorbis. He took a few steps forward and then held the lantern out as he appeared to regard the deacon critically.
"'Hmm,'
he said.
"'You are the perpetrator?'
said Vorbis.
"'Indeed. Didactylos is my name. You are blind?' "'Only as far as vision is concerned, my lord.'
"'Yet you carry a lantern,' said Vorbis, "'doubtless for some catchword reason. "'Probably you'll tell me you're looking for an honest man.'
"'I don't know, my lord. "'Perhaps you could tell me what he looks like.'
"'I should strike you down now,' said Vorbis.
"'Oh, certainly.'
Vorbis indicated the book.
"'These lies, this scandal, this lure to drag the minds of men from the path of true knowledge. You dare to stand before me and declare," he pushed the book with a toe, "that the world is flat and travels through the void on the back of a giant turtle?"
Brother held his breath. So did history. "Affirm your belief," Brother thought. "Just once, someone please stand up to Vorbis. I can't, but someone." He found his eyes swivelling towards Simony, who stood on the other side of Vorbis's chair. The sergeant looked transfixed, fascinated. Didactylos drew himself up to his full height. He half turned, and for a moment his blank gaze passed across Brother. The lantern was extended at arm's length.
"No," he said. "When every honest man knows that the world is a sphere, a perfect shape bound to spin around the sphere of the sun as man orbits the central truth of Om," said Vorbis, "and the stars."
Brother leaned forward, heart pounding.
"My lord," he whispered.
"What?"
snapped Vorbis.
"He said no," said Brother.
"That's right," said Didactylos.
Vorbis sat absolutely motionless for a moment, then his jaw moved a fraction, as if he was rehearsing some words under his breath.
"You deny it?" he said. "Let it be a sphere," said Didactylos. "No problem with the sphere. No doubt special arrangements are made for everything to stay on, and the sun can be another larger sphere a long way off. Would you like the moon to orbit around the world or the sun?" "I advise the world, more hierarchical, and a splendid example to us all." Brother was seeing something he'd never seen before. Vorbis was looking bewildered. "But you wrote, you said the world is on the back of a giant turtle. You gave the turtle a name." Didactylos shrugged. "Oh, now I know better," he said. "Who ever heard of a turtle 10,000 miles long, swimming through the emptiness of space? Oh, for stupidity, I am embarrassed to think of it now." Vorbis shut his mouth. Then he opened it again. "This is how an Ephebian philosopher behaves," he said. Didactylos shrugged again. "It is how any true philosopher behaves," he said. "One must always be ready to embrace new ideas, take account of new proofs, don't you agree? And you have brought us many new points." A gesture seemed to take in, quite by accident, the Omnian bowmen around the room. "For me to ponder. I can always be swayed by powerful argument."
"Your lies have already poisoned the world."
"Then I shall write another book," said Didactylos calmly. "Think how it will look. Proud Didactylos, swayed by the arguments of the Omnians. A full retraction. In fact, with your permission, Lord, I know you have much to do, looting and burning and so on. I will retire to my barrel right away and start work on it. A universe of spheres, balls, spinning through space. Yes, with your permission, Lord, I will write you more balls than you can imagine." The old philosopher turned and very slowly walked towards the exit. Vorbis watched him go. Brother saw him half raise his hand to signal the guards, and then lowered it again. Vorbis turned to the tyrant.
"So much for your..." he began.
"Cooey!" The lantern sailed through the doorway and shattered against Vorbis's skull. "Nevertheless, the turtle moves!" Vorbis leapt to his feet. "Aye!" he screamed, and then got a grip on himself. He waved irritably at a couple of the guards.
"I want him caught, now. And, brother?"
Brother could hardly hear him for the rush of blood in his ears. Didactylos had been a better thinker than he'd thought.
"Yes, Lord? You will take a party of men, and you will take them to the library. And then, brother, you will burn the library."
Didactylos was blind, but it was dark. The pursuing guards could see, except that there was nothing to see by. And they hadn't spent their lives wandering the twisty, uneven, and above all many-stepped lanes of Ephebe.
8, 9, 10, 11, muttered the philosopher, bounding up a pitch-dark flight of steps and hearing round a corner.
"Whoa! Ow! Whoa! That was my knee!"
muttered most of the guards in a heap about halfway up. One made it to the top, though. By starlight he could just make out the skinny figure bounding madly along the street. He raised his crossbow. The old fool wasn't even dodging, a perfect target. There was a twang. The guard looked puzzled for a moment. The bow toppled from his hands, firing itself as it hit the cobbles and sending its bolt ricocheting off a statue. He looked down at the feathered shaft sticking out of his chest, and then at the figure detaching itself from the shadows.
"Sergeant Simony," he whispered.
"I'm sorry," said Simony. "I really am, but the truth is important."
The soldier opened his mouth to give his opinion of the truth, and then slumped forwards. He opened his eyes. Simony was walking away. Everything looked lighter. It was still dark, but now he could see in the darkness. Everything was shades of grey, and the cobbles under his hand had somehow become a coarse black sand. He looked up.
"On your feet, Private Itchloss."
He stood up sheepishly. Now he was more than just a soldier, an anonymous figure to chase and be killed and be no more than a shadowy bit player in other people's lives. Now he was Dervi Itchloss, aged 38, comparatively blameless in the general scheme of things, and dead. He raised a hand to his lips uncertainly.
"You're the judge," he said.
"Not me."
Ichloss looked at the sands stretching away. He knew instinctively what he had to do. He was far less sophisticated than General Fryett, and took more notice of songs he'd learned in his childhood. Besides, he had an advantage. He'd had even less religion than the general.
"Judgment is at the end of the desert."
Ichloss tried to smile.
"My mum told me about this," he said. "When you're dead, you have to walk a desert, and you see everything properly," she said, "and remember everything right."
Death studiously did nothing to indicate his feelings either way.
"Might meet a few friends on the way, eh?" said the soldier.
"Possibly."
Ichloss set out. On the whole, he thought, it could have been worse. Ern clambered across the shelves like a monkey, pulling books out of their racks and throwing them down on the floor.
"I could carry about 20, he said, "but which 20?
"Always wanted to do that," murmured Didactylos happily. "Upholding truth in the face of tyranny and so on. One man, unafraid of the..."
"What to take? What to take?" shouted Ern.
"Well, we don't need Greedo's mechanics," said Didactylos. "Hey, I wish I could have just seen the look on his face. Damn good shot, considering. I just hope someone wrote down what I did."
"Principles on gearing, theory of water expansion," shouted Ern. "But we don't need Ibid's civics or Gnomon's ectopia, that's for sure."
"What? They belong to all mankind," snapped Didactylos.
"Then if all mankind will come and help us carry them, that's fine," said Ern. "But it's just the two of us. I prefer to carry something useful."
"Useful? Books on mechanisms?"
"Yes, they could show people how to live better."
"And these show people how to be people," said Didactylos. "Which reminds me, find another lantern. I feel quite blind without one."
The library door shook to a thunderous knocking. It wasn't the knocking of people who expected the door to be opened.
"We could throw some of the others into the..."
The hinges leapt out of the walls. The door thudded down. Soldiers scrambled over it, swords drawn.
"Ah, gentlemen," said Didactylos, "pray don't disturb my circles."
The corporal in charge looked at him blankly and then down at the floor.
"What circles?" he said.
"Hey, how about giving me a pair of compasses and coming back in, say, half an hour?"
"Leave him, corporal," said Brother.
He stepped over the door.
"I said leave him."
"But I got orders to..."
"Are you deaf? If you are, the Quisition can cure that," said Brother, astonished at the steadiness of his own voice.
"You don't belong to the Quisition," said the corporal.
"No, but I know a man who does," said Brother. "You are to search the palace for books. Leave him with me. He's an old man. What harm can he do?"
The corporal looked hesitantly from Brother to his prisoners.
"Very good, corporal. I will take over."
They all turned.
"Did you hear me?" said Sergeant Simony, pushing his way forward. "But the deacon told us..." "Corporal?"
"Yes, sergeant?"
"The deacon is far away. I am right here."
"Yes, sergeant."
"Go."
"Yes, sergeant."
Simony cocked an ear as the soldiers marched away. Then he stuck his sword in the door and turned to Didactylos. He made a fist with his left hand and brought his right hand down on it, palm extended.
"The turtle moves," he said.
That all depends," said the philosopher cautiously.
"I mean, I am a friend," he said.
"Why should we trust you?" said Ern.
"Because you haven't got any choice," said Sergeant Simony briskly.
"Can you get us out of here?" said Brother.
Simony glared at him.
"You?" he said. "Why should I get you out of here? You're an inquisitor."
He grasped his sword. Brother backed away.
"I'm not. On the ship when the captain sounded you, you just said nothing," said Simony. "You're not one of us."
"I don't think I'm one of them either," said Brother. "I'm one of mine."
He gave Didactylos an imploring look, which was a wasted effort, and turned it towards Ern instead.
"I don't know about this soldier," he said. "All I know is that Vorbis means to have you killed, and he will burn your library. But I can help. I worked it out on the way here."
"And don't listen to him," said Simony.
He dropped on one knee in front of Didactylos like a supplicant.
"Sir, there are some of us who know your book for what it is. See, I have a copy."
He fumbled inside his breastplate.
"We copied it out," said Simony. "One copy, that's all we had.
but it's been passed around. Some of us who could read it to the others. It makes so much sense.
Said Didactylos.
What?
Simony waved his hands in excitement.
Because we know it. I've been to places that it's true. There is a great turtle. The turtle does move. We don't need gods.
Ern, no one stripped the copper off the roof, have they?
Said Didactylos. Don't think so.
Remind me not to talk to this chap outside, then.
You don't understand, said Simony. I can save you. You have friends in unexpected places. Come on. I'll just kill this priest.
He gripped his sword. Brother backed away.
No, I can help too. That's why I came. When I saw you in front of Vorbis, I knew what I could do.
What could you do? Sneered Ern.
I can save the library.
What? Put it on your back and run away?
Sneered Simony.
No, I don't mean that. How many scrolls are there?
About 700, said Didactylos.
How many of them are important?
All of them, said Ern.
Maybe a couple of hundred, said Didactylos mildly.
Uncle!
All the rest is just wind and vanity publishing, said Didactylos.
But they're books.
I may be able to take more than that, said Brother slowly. Is there a way out?
There could be, said Didactylos.
Don't tell him, said Simony.
Then all your books will burn, said Brother.
He pointed to Simony.
He said you haven't got a choice, so you haven't got anything to lose, have you?
He's a... Simony began.
Oh, everyone shut up, said Didactylos.
He stared past Brother's ear.
There may be a way out, he said. What do you intend?
I don't believe this, said Ern. There's Omnians here, and you're telling them there's another way out.
There's tunnels all through this rock, said Didactylos.
Maybe, but we don't tell people.
I'm inclined to trust this person, said Didactylos. He's got an honest face.
Speaking philosophically.
Why should we trust him? Anyone stupid enough to expect us to trust him in these circumstances must be trustworthy, said Didactylos. He'd be too stupid to be deceitful.
I can walk out of here right now, said Brother, and where will your library be then?
You see, said Simony. Just when things apparently look dark, suddenly we have unexpected friends everywhere, said Didactylos. What is your plan, young man?
I haven't got one, said Brother. I just do things one after the other.
And how long will doing things one after another take you?
About 10 minutes, I think.
Simony glared at Brother.
Now get the books, said Brother, and I shall need some light.
But you can't even read, said Ern.
I'm not going to read them.
Brother looked blankly at the first scroll, which happened to be De Chelonian Mobile.
Oh, my God, he said.
Is something wrong? Said Didactylos.
Could someone fetch my tortoise?
Simony trotted through the palace. No one was paying him much attention. Most of the Ephebian guard were outside the labyrinth, and Vorbis had made it clear to anyone who was thinking of venturing inside just what would happen to the palace's inhabitants. Groups of Omnian soldiers were looting in a disciplined sort of a way. Besides, he was returning to his quarters. There was a tortoise in Brother's room. It was sitting on the table between a rolled-up scroll and a gnawed melon rind, and insofar as it was possible to tell with tortoises, was asleep. Simony grabbed it without ceremony, rammed it into his pack, and hurried back towards the library. He hated himself for doing it. The stupid priest had ruined everything. But Didactylos had made him promise, and Didactylos was the man who knew the truth. All the way there, he had the impression that someone was trying to attract his attention.
"You could remember them just by looking," said Ern.
"Yes."
"The whole scroll?"
"Yes."
"I don't believe you."
"The word Librum outside this building has a chip in the top of the first letter," said Brother. "Zeno wrote Reflections, and old Aristocrates wrote Platitudes, and Didactylos thinks Ibid's discourses are bloody stupid. There are 600 paces from the tyrant's throne room to the library. There is a..."
"He's got a good memory, you've got to grant him that," said Didactylos.
Show him some more scrolls.
How will we know he's remembered them?
Erne demanded, unrolling a scroll of geometrical theorems. He can't read, and even if he could, he can't write.
We shall have to teach him.
Brother looked at a scroll full of maps. He shut his eyes. For a moment the jagged outline glowed against the inside of his eyelids, and then he felt them settle into his mind. They were still there somewhere. He could bring them back at any time. Erne unrolled another scroll. Pictures of animals. This one, drawings of plants and lots of writing. This one, just writing. This one, triangles and things. They settled down in his memory. After a while, he wasn't even aware of the scroll unrolling. He just had to keep looking. He wondered how much he could remember. But that was stupid. You just remembered everything you saw. A tabletop or a scroll full of writing. There was as much information in the grain and colouring of the wood as there was in Zeno's reflections. Even so, he was conscious of a certain heaviness of mind, a feeling that if he turned his head sharply, then memory would slosh out of his ears. Erne picked up a scroll at random and unrolled it part way.
"Describe what an ambiguous puzuma looks like," he demanded.
"Don't know," said Brother. He blinked.
"So much for Mr. Memory," said Erne.
"He can't read, boy. That's not fair," said the philosopher.
"All right. I mean, the fourth picture in the third scroll you saw," said Erne.
"A four-legged creature facing left," said Brother. "A large head similar to a cat's, and broad shoulders with the body tapering towards the hind quarters. The body is a pattern of dark and light squares. The ears are very small and laid flat against the head. There are six whiskers. The tail is stubby. Only the hind feet are clawed, three claws on each foot. The forefeet are about the same length as the head and held up against the body. A band of thick hair..."
"That was 50 scrolls ago," said Erne. He saw the whole scroll for a second or two.
They looked at Brother. Brother blinked again.
"You know everything," said Erne.
"I don't know."
"You've got half the library in your head."
"I feel a bit..." The library of Apheeb was a furnace. The flames burned blue where the melted copper roof dripped into the shelves. All libraries everywhere are connected by the bookworm holes in space created by the strong space-time distortions found around any large collection of books. Only a very few librarians learn the secret, and there are inflexible rules about making use of the fact, because it amounts to time travel, and time travel causes big problems. But if a library is on fire, and down in the history books as having been on fire... There was a small pop, utterly unheard among the crackling of the bookshelves, and a figure dropped out of nowhere onto a small patch of unburned floor in the middle of the library. It looked ape-like, but it moved in a very purposeful way. Long simian arms beat out the flames, pulled scrolls off the shelves, and stuffed them into a sack. When the sack was full, it knuckled back into the middle of the room and vanished with another pop. This has nothing to do with the story. Nor does the fact that, sometime later, scrolls thought to have been destroyed in the Great Apheban Library fire turned up in remarkably good condition in the library of the Unseen University in Ankh-Morpork. But it's nice to know, even so.